Well, thanks for sticking on to the end, to the last presentation of this session. I'm just going to start my timer so I know how far I'm going. Okay, so today I'm going to talk about sale of tobacco and e-cigarette products to minors. And I will talk about some trends over a 10-year period, but really the main focus of this presentation is going to be the development of a risk-based score for an efficient tobacco compliance check process. And so just to give an outline, I will start with a little bit of background, introducing the tobacco landscape in King County, and also how compliance checks are done in our county, and some recent legislative developments, political developments around the tobacco legislative arena in Washington state. And then objectives, share my methods, talk about the findings, and some discussion. So just to give you a background, King County is the most populous county in Washington state. I think we have a population of around 2.1 million, two-thirds of whom are within the Seattle metropolitan area. So there are about a little over 1,900 tobacco retailers as of 2016. So this map shows all licensed tobacco retailers in King County, as well as some unlicensed e-cigarette and vapor retailers. Not all of them, some of them, and I'll explain why. And tobacco retailers range from convenience stores, gas stations, and they're really the majority of these retailers in King County. But we also have a few restaurants, bars, and lounges. So when I talk about compliance checks, I'm talking with reference to sale to minors, like I mentioned, underage minors. And the basis for compliance checks is the SINAR amendment, for those of you who are familiar with tobacco legislation. And this requires states to enforce these regulations regarding sale to minors. And it also requires states to conduct random, unannounced inspections to check for sales to minors. And so prior to, so the way these the checks are done is with the help of a student volunteers from King County Public Schools, who are accompanied by our program staff. And so the volunteer goes inside and attempts to make a purchase. So prior to 2004, we used to actually do a census throughout the county. So we would hit every single retailer. However, staff and research resource constraints have now have us targeting at about 1,000 checks a year. And so this is a convenience-based sample. So it's not, there isn't really a systematic way for our program to do these checks. And so often we use Yelp to find out what stores are closest to the student volunteers' pick-up and drop-off point. And so it's, you know, it varies. And so you can see that if you look at some of just the number of checks and the number of stores over the past 3 years that have been checked, you know, you'll see a variation. And so as a result of this, some stores get checked multiple times a year and some don't get checked at all. So this map, the pink in this map is actually showing the stores that have never been checked or not recently. And so through this presentation, I am looking at stores in two different ways. So the ones that have been checked recently, by which I mean 2010 or later, and ones that have never been checked or have not been checked since 2010. So the pink is those ones. And so when we look at our data of the 1,900 or actually more than 1,900 stores, we see that about 25% of them have actually not been checked recently, and the majority of these have never been checked at all, never received a compliance check visit. So why categorize retailers with a risk score? What is the utility of this? One of the utilities that we consider is that it helps us understand the tobacco retail landscape a bit better from a public health promotion point of view, from a prevention point of view. So just sort of to get that understanding. And the second objective, the reason for the motivation for the study in the first place was that our program team wanted an efficient way to conduct their compliance checks. And so there have been, so in Washington state in April of this year, the state legislature passed what is known as the vape bill, which is specifically regarding vapor products. And this bill has a lot of really useful and long-awaited statutes, such as it enforces regulations on youth access to e-cigarette and vapor products, and also public use of these products in Washington State. And for the first time, this bill gives us in King County the ability to have identified e-cigarette retailers, because they will now be required to be licensed, which was not the case before. However, in spite of that, it has a lot of preemptive statutes, which some of them are pretty unfortunate for our tobacco prevention team, because it preempts any local fees over and above the state fee, which is actually quite low. And so it has, and traditionally, King County has always had a more stringent regulatory environment around this than the state. And so consequently, it also reduces the revenue for a lot of outreach and education activities that were already in the planning. So a risk-based scoring is one method of applying a targeted approach, which can be modified as per the program's priorities and needs change over time. And so a lot of similar work has been done in the tobacco regulatory environment, as well as the food regulatory agencies in Canada, in Ontario. And so this product borrows a lot of that methodology from this particular study done, or this particular evaluation of the risk enforcement pilot study that's been done by the Ontario Tobacco Research Unit. It's a little bit different because we have not collected our own data, but we've used data that's being collected by the compliance check process. So my objectives were, the first one was to describe the compliance check data from 2006 to 2015, and the second was, and this is really the main one, is to develop a risk-based scoring process for checking King County tobacco retailers. So I just want to say at this point that it is a little bit more heavy towards the second outcome, or the second objective, and also that it is currently a work in progress. We are having a lot of discussions with our program team on how to finesse this, and so I would really appreciate your comments if you have any at the end of this. So my methods, before that I just wanted to, so this is the way we collect our data. Oh my gosh, it looks really unclear for me. But this is how we collect the data, gets entered into an access database. So there's a, you know, location information, business name, and a whole variety of variables such as youth characteristics like age and gender, clock characteristics, location, when the sale was made, what kind of product was it. So we have a lot of information in this. So I did very basic descriptive statistics on this data set, and then I also did analysis to bivariate analysis determine whether sales to youth were associated with the following six factors: product type, store type, whether the youth was asked for ID, youth's age, clerk's age, and clerk-youth gender combination, and each individual factor, whether it was associated. So no multivariate statistics. I was looking for consistent patterns across all the years, anything that emerged across all 10 years, and also for anything in the most recent year, which is 2015. And I looked for trends over time using linear regression. I used data for this. And for the risk-based score, there was a lot of data cleaning involved, because our data set is, this is the first time we're doing something like this, and the data set is just very error-prone because it's all manual, although it doesn't need to be manual because it's an access database, and they have iPads now. So that's one of the lessons learned. I geocoded all the tobacco retailers in King County, and in consultation with the project team, determined criteria, weights, and cutoffs for the risk score. I also analyzed the 2014 Healthy Youth Survey, because one of the components is from this survey. And for those who don't know, this is the HYS is our state's version of the YRBS. So it's conducted among school students. And then some geographic analysis based on certain other factors that I'll get into. And then the risk score itself was calculated based on four criteria: whether the store was located in an area of high youth tobacco use, whether it was located in a tobacco-dense school neighborhood, whether the store had sold to minors in the past 3 years, and whether it was a business type with the highest rate of non-compliance. And I did this using ArcGIS and Stata. So these were components, and while we used an approach that was a combination of consulting the literature for what these core components were, but it had a heavy program input. And so at this point, this is very, very much directed by our program people and what they, from a field perspective, have felt would be important in this process. But it's under discussion. And so for density, I just wanted to mention, for density, we have looked at, we have had a lot of conversations about whether we should include density to in a school zone, or should we look at proximity? And so based on the literature, there's just a lot more literature on density, and it relates density within a half-mile zone to things like youth initiation of tobacco, and so we decided to go with density. We also chose a 0.5-mile radius around the school. And the second geographic component was whether the store is located in an area with high youth tobacco use rates. And so we used, for the area, we started off by using school district. These are the same criteria with the weights, and so you can see it's heavily weighed, the score is heavily weighed for whether a prior sale was made in the past 3 years, and that was a strong program preference. But all these are under discussion before implementation. And so it is a binary scoring, you'll also notice. Okay, so some results. Looking at checks over the past 10 years, there's a lot of variation, and this reflects program priorities. And when we look at store types, the majority, 75% of the store types that we've checked include convenience stores within without gas stations and grocery stores, but they're also like pharmacy and drug stores. And so most of the products that have been attempted to buy, 90% of them are cigarettes. And since 2014, we've started checking for e-cigarettes and vapor products as well. So across all the 10 years of data, one factor emerged as significantly associated with sale to minors, and that was whether the youth was asked for ID. And just in 2015, there were four factors, the product type, store type, whether the youth was asked for ID, and clerk age, as visually identified. And then depending on how sacred you find the, you consider the p-value, youth age also, or maybe not. So so this is just the non-compliance percentage over the years. This was found to be a statistically significant trend, but as you can see from the coefficient, it's like really, really small. So we're not considering this very meaningful. So scoring criteria, like I mentioned, these were the four scoring criteria. This is a map, and I want to discuss two of the geographic components of that. So this is a map of tobacco retail density around schools. So each circle that you see represents, so can you see the white circle? Is it really not clear? So there's a whole bunch of circles on this side that are white. And there are about 178 schools. Each of the circles represents a zone, a half-mile radius around a zone. And the darker the color of the circle, the more tobacco-dense that school zone is. And so you can see in the legend, there are about 178 schools that have no tobacco retailers in their little half-mile zone. And then up to 66 tobacco retailers, that's three stores. And zooming into Seattle, it's, it's that downtown and National District neighborhood that has those really high tobacco dense zones. And this is the same information, but just by number of retailers. So on the x-axis is the density of retailers within a half-mile radius. And so you can see that 835 retailers are in school zones that have are pretty low density using the five tobacco retailers cutoff. And about 58% of all our retailers are in pretty highly tobacco-dense school neighborhoods. This is from the HYS analysis. And so we see that of our 18 school districts, which are on the x-axis, two of them have statistically significantly higher youth tobacco use rates than the county. And so if you were located in one of these two, we included that in the. And so just about 6% of our stores are located in these two school districts. So if you look at all the scoring criteria together, I've separated this by stores that were recently checked and not checked, and it's appropriate to do so because the ones that are not checked are getting a free pass on two of the four criteria because they've never been checked before. And so one of the things, the striking thing here is that among the stores that we don't check or have never checked, you know, a much higher percentage is located in these tobacco dense school zones. And so when we do compute these risk scores, this is what we find. Among the stores that have been recently checked, you know, a moderate number are scored pretty low, and then, you know, there's one store that's like really high, but most of them are in the middle. And then a similar pattern for the ones that have never been checked. Of course, their range is much narrower because we're only judging them based on two criteria. And so then we propose this very preliminary cutoff for like low, medium, and high priority stores. And this is certainly something that we are looking at more closely, and the cutoffs can change, and we want it to be flexible. But applying these cutoffs, so if you score zero, you're low priority, and then less than 0.5, you're medium, and then higher than that, you're high. This is what we see. 30% of our stores are low, 56% are medium, and 14% are high. And then for the ones that are recent, not checked, it's 35% are low priority stores and 65% are high priority stores. And we're using the same cutoffs, but of course we're going to view this group of stores differently because they've never been checked. So we're really viewing this as medium priority and high priority when we implement this. And so these are just some maps of how this is distributed. Just thinking about how we would implement the results of this, here's one hypothetical way. So if you consider that we have a budget of about to do 1,000 compliance checks in King County, one thing we may want to think about is distribute them among the ones that have already been checked recently in a 70-25-5 manner across the priority types. And then similarly for the ones that have never been checked, is a 80 and 20 distribution. So something like that. So what we're looking for, like our goal would be like a J-shaped curve or an inverse J-shaped curve that's decreasing. And so then if we ask us, when we asked ourselves, how are we doing compared to this? So on the left is the goal that we're aiming for. And I actually can't see from here if you can see, but I will just say it in words in case you can't. But what we're seeing in our 2015, 14, and 13 checks is more of a symmetrical distribution with majority of the checks in the medium. And so we have a lot of room to improve here because we really want the majority of our checks to be the high priority ones. And so there were a lot of limitations to this to study. The data actually, since this is the first time we're doing it, it is really very error prone. UBIs, which are the unique business identifiers, if we had that information, which was not error prone, it would have been just a piece of cake to do this, but there was no way to identify unique stores because the UBIs were all a mess. And so as part of cleaning that and merging them together with the shapefile that the state provides, there has been a slight overestimation of tobacco retail. So that's certainly something we need to go back and like think about how to reduce that before implementation. There's also a binary scoring process, a 0 or a 1, and there are certainly better ways to do that. So the next steps are we'd like to do multivariate statistics to examine factors that are associated with sale to minors, taking into account possible confounders and effect modifiers to get a better picture of it. And also we need to decide how we're going to sample within these priority levels. So for example, if we have 848 medium priority stores, how do we sample 125 of these? So those kinds of decisions we need to think about. Alternate prioritization schemes are definitely possible, and we want this model to have the flexibility to account for those with changing political scenarios and funding environments. Also, like I mentioned, we'd like to refine the scoring and also our weights before implementation, and ask ourselves whether additional criteria need to be added, and a non-binary scoring method. And finally, we definitely want this to be a dynamic model that allows for yearly updates and is automated. And this can be done using ArcGIS Model Builder fairly easily. But before that, there's a lot of work to be done in terms of just cleaning the data. Specifically, we're also going to be working with our program team to develop some TA around and best practices around how data is entered within their system before this automation can really take place. And so here are my references. I want to thank the following people. Scott and Neil are the program staff, and they've been really, really great to work with and to give a really great perspective from the field. And I will take any questions that you have. Okay, so the Healthy Youth Survey has school district level information.
Okay. Is that kind of something that's modeled after the Youth Risk Behavior Survey or something? Or that's specific to your county, right?
That is no, it's specific to Washington State. Is that right, Eva? Okay. It's like, so Washington State has that, yeah, so we get it by school district. Well, so, yeah. We can get it, but we're not actually allowed to report at that level, and that's why I had to de-identify this. So there's nothing we can do at the school district level, but, you know, we have it. Yes, we can get the, but we can't, you know, publish it with the breakdown. So what we do is we, by the school level, I think, is that? Yeah. From this, exactly. Without the permission of the school superintendents, we can't, but then we usually. And Trevor is a tobacco epi at the state of Washington. Thanks. Any other questions?
I just have one question about the when the students are doing the age assessment of the clerk, is it age ranges that they're using?
It is age ranges, yeah. Yeah, they have a box, like there's a check boxes, so they just.
It would be interesting. I don't think there's really a good way to validate, but it would be interesting to see how they're perceiving age.
Yeah.
On average, how old are the students?
Between 15 and, they have to be below 18 to do this, so it's like they start at 15, but we have a few like stragglers and like 14-year-olds as well. Yeah. No, it's not at all 100%. And the geocoding process is really complicated because what I did first is that the Washington DOH already has a geocoded file, but it was from 2010. And I realized after coming to this conference that they actually existed 2015 geocoded file. Anyway, so I merged with that based on addresses because the UBI field was really bad. And then the ones that were not matched, I geocoded those. And then I think the rate was, I want to say maybe like 85%. Not too bad. So I had to manually geocode some. Well, so no, there were actually only 50 retailers that I had to manually geocode. Because after the merging process with the shapefile of DOH that's already geocoded, I was left with like some, and then 85% of those batch geocoded using ArcGIS, and then the rest of them were just like 50,
so
I want
to
say.
Like a network analysis, so did you
like a service area? Like how did you go about setting up your buffers? Oh, my buffers were based on the schools in King County. There's about 590 schools. So each of the school, I just drew a 0.5 mile buffer around the school. Yes. And then just the if there were five or more tobacco stores inside the school, inside that half-mile buffer, then they were assigned a higher score than if there were below five. Yes. Yeah, there's really a lot in the Seattle area, which is really weird. But, because this is what it looks like. So, that, you know, there's not a whole lot, like, that's out in the boonies, right, that you can't get to. So, I don't know the characteristics of those retailers. All we have is addresses for them and their UBIs. But I think that's something because we want to eventually sit down with this whole list along with the risk scores and then look at why have these folks not been checked, especially because they're close to like retailers that are being checked. So I don't have an answer. Yeah. Yeah, I think it's not a systematic process to select the student volunteers. Our tobacco coordinator, the compliance coordinator, Fell, he goes out to schools and he does these trainings at schools and he just asks for volunteers. So like it's mostly around downtown and like South King County, so like this area right here. And, you know, the students that really want to volunteer just...
That's probably why it looks better.
Yeah, because they live there, and so then he just figures out that they have to get dropped off. But I get your point. Like, I think we're going to have to rethink just that whole model of participation. Any other questions? Okay, thank you.